Welcome to Triad Arts Weekend. I'm David Ford. Grab your mojitos and put on your best patois because we're off to the Caribbean today on Triad Arts Weekend. Our first stop is Haiti, and our tour guides will be two dynamic UNCSA music students and their fearless leader, Professor Jonathan Milner. Soon they'll be bringing music, education, and fun to the orphans of Port-au-Prince. But their first stop is right here, live in Studio A. We'll wrap up today's show with rumba, mambo, and the wonderful danzón sounds of Havana. Cuban conductor Zenaida Romeu is here for a game-changing week of music education and performance with the Winston-Salem Youth Symphony Orchestras. And in between our Caribbean cruise, we'll salute our 16th president with Once Upon a Blue Ridge actor Peter Holland and his one-man Lincoln show, experience the zen of good garden design with John Newman, and we'll explore the ethereal sounds of French composer Eric Satie with our good friend Mr. Peter Karoff back at the keyboard next after this news. Jonathan Milner teaches AP U.S. Government and Civics and Economics to high school students at the University of North Carolina School of the Arts. During his more than two decades of teaching, Jonathan has brought a level of passion, energy, and commitment to the classroom that's engaged his students in remarkable ways. But it's their concentrated work that goes on outside the classroom that may be most remarkable. In 2005, Jonathan founded Global Arts, an educational exchange program to expand his students' horizons and bring students together from the U.S., Eastern Europe, the Middle East, Africa, and Latin America. Jonathan says his field trips abroad have been life-altering experiences for him and for his students. Two UNCSA students join me today, senior violist Sean Mulligan and rising junior French hornist Meredith Bain. Tonight, they'll be performing an important concert to raise the funds that will send them and their classmates to Port-au-Prince, Haiti, where they'll join with and learn from the students at the Zanmi Beni Orphanage. The Haiti Project concert is free and open to the public tonight at 7:30 in Crawford Hall on the UNCSA campus. Jonathan, Sean, and Meredith drop by to talk about it. Meredith, you could do a recital in Watson Hall. Why are you going all the way to Haiti to play? What's the draw for you, and what moved you to make that decision?
Well, I'm super excited to go to Haiti to interact with the children and just see how they view the world as, like, there's a totally different viewpoint of the children in Haiti than from kids here. And I'm excited how that's going to affect my musical career by the influence of folk music.
Folk music. Now, that's something that's a passion of yours?
It is.
Tell me about that interest.
Well, my sisters and I, we just love to sing. So just the collective making music with people is really the passion.
So you'll get a chance to play with some of the students in Haiti?
Yes, we're going to be forming a bucket band with the children so we can have a classroom setting of music and just use music as a means of communication between us and the children.
What is a bucket band?
A bucket band is where we're just going to go and we're going to use found instruments, like percussion items, specifically buckets, so we can just make the music like a drum circle.
Great.
Type of deal, yeah.
Will you be bringing a French horn there as well or no?
I will not.
Okay. And you're studying with David Jolly. French horn, one of the most difficult instruments to play in the orchestra, I got to say. You're blowing through, 35 feet of pipe?
About 35,
all wound
yes.
up. What has David Jolly given you in your education there at UNCSA?
He's giving me such a great perspective on musicality and musicianship, just how to express yourself through the horn rather than use the horn as a means of, like, succeeding for the purpose of success. It's a way to express yourself.
I got to say, he's one of the most musical players of any instrument I've ever heard, so I can certainly understand how musicality rubs off on his students. Well, let's hear a sample of that. What are you going to play for us today?
I'm going to play an excerpt from Gilbert Vinter's Hunter's Moon.
Hunter's Moon. All right. We can evoke the sound of the moon here live in Studio A. Well, let's hear it.
Okay.
Thank you. that's some beautiful playing. So that's Meredith Bain live in Studio A. And what a nice, in such a short little snippet, you really get a sense of that setting. How about the preparation for that piece? What are some of the challenges, horn playing wise, and just sustaining that beautiful tone for that time?
Well, horn playing is all about air, and that's a main point that I've been working on this entire year. It's about breathing from your abdomen and using the stream of air to just connect the notes and make it as smooth as possible.
Nice.
So that's a lot that goes into it.
Good legato playing.
Yes.
Well, you've got that and then some.
Thank you.
All right. So that's Meredith Bain live in Studio A. And Meredith, thanks for coming to talk with us today.
Thank you.
Really appreciate it. And from horn to viola next, and another UNCSA All-Star. Sean, I got a chance to hear you play earlier in the year at that house concert. I happen to know your playing is wonderful as well. But taking that sound to Haiti, what's the draw for you? How did you first hear about this opportunity, and why make that move? It's a big commitment.
Yeah, well, I actually am not in Mr. Milner's class this year, but I was 2 years ago. And so a lot of my friends, however, are in his class. So when I heard that they were taking a trip to Haiti to educate children through art, as an artist, that's pretty much all I want to do. And I think we often get to talk to the people through our instruments or through our art in the community of Winston-Salem. But going to Haiti and kids who, you know, where the language of music and the language of art in general is so important, because you either don't speak the same language or it's something they need. Like my teacher once said, you know, you look at people without, you know, homes or clothes or just not ideal situations, you know, an orphanage or something like that, and you still hear them singing. And so that, if anything, is why I want to go, because if I can sing with them or teach them to sing or express themselves through music and, you know, hear what they have to say musically or just in any sort of art expression, I mean, that's why I want to go. It's different culture, and it would be great to share that kind of experience.
It's really interesting. You both referenced singing, and of course, the ideal for any instrumentalist is to be able to perform on your instrument as if you were singing. And a lot of teachers, I don't know if David or Sheila does it. Sheila Brown, your teacher at UNCSA, encourages you to sing through the music before you perform. Do you ever do that with Sheila?
Yeah. She has perfect pitch, so she sings all the time. But it's a little embarrassing to sing sometimes. But yeah, she makes us do it all the time.
I should say for non-musicians, perfect pitch, being able to, I'd say, sing a C-sharp, and she looked and sing that C-sharp, regardless. And she can recognize pitches. My wife has that same ability. I'm so jealous. Oh, I wish I had perfect pitch. But anyway, I happen to know that you are, and as we just heard with Meredith, one who can play as if you were singing. And what are you going to play for us / sing for us on the viola today?
Well, I actually wrote a piece 2 years ago entitled Garth Mahagat, which is Gaelic, if I'm pronouncing it right. Sorry, Mom, if I'm not. My parents are from Ireland, Dublin, actually. And so I wrote a piece to thank everybody that I would ever play for. And so this is the piece that I'll be playing for you.
Garth Mahagat, performed live in Studio A, an original composition. And this is Sean Mulligan performing on viola. Sean, that's a beautiful piece.
Thank you. Thanks.
Really enjoyed that. Who were some of your influences compositionally?
Well, really, actually, originally it was written for a girl.
Okay.
So, da da dee dum, you know, is sort of a longing. She was a really good friend of mine and still is. And I decided, since I was thanking her, that I would change it to thanking everybody. So,
very nice.
And some of the Irish undertones, it's just, you know, growing up listening to folk music and things like the Dubliners, you know, my parents were just always listening to some sort of folky, you know, Irish tune of some sort.
Yeah. And you, some of the double and triple stops in that, I think there were triple stops, are just really intense. I mean, is there a composer for solo viola that you've heard that kind of inspired that approach to the instrument, or is it all Sean, which is just fine too?
I don't know. I mean, I listen, actually, really, I'm probably a bad classical musician. I listen to a lot more outside music that isn't so classical. I don't know, like a lot of guitarists, actually. My roommate is a guitarist. And the idea to have an instrument where, you know, you're playing, but it sounds like more than one instrument, it's sort of, you know, to be able to do that, it's awesome and empowering in a way that I think conveys a message that is a little bit stronger.
It really is. I've always been a sucker for that. Great. Well, guys, thank you so much for coming in and playing for us today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you, David.
Jonathan Milner with us. I should say Jonathan Milner, Marcellus Waddill Excellence in Teaching Award winner back in 2002. Jonathan, welcome.
Hi.
Global Arts Project, 8 years old now. How did it begin, and how has it evolved?
It began a long time ago when a gentleman who works at the United Nations came and talked to a class of mine. And the kids got so excited and engaged by his presentation that we took the story he gave us about Bosnia, and we ran with it. And the students did research, and they learned about Bosnia. They got maps out. They got, you know, computers out. They got books. And the kids learned so much.
Like what?
Well, they really didn't know much about the war in Bosnia, the genocide that occurred there, the horrors of the 90s and the war. And by the end of his speech, they just wanted to know all they could learn about it. And later that year, we raised money, brought a kid over from Bosnia to study with us. And then subsequently, we brought kids over for the next couple of years. Some of my students went over to Bosnia. I got the chance to go over there and meet a bunch of people. And it was a really great, enlightening exchange where on both sides, people learn more about the world.
It's a phenomenon. And we're talking about high school students?
We're talking about high school students.
And I've heard of, you know, well, our son just took a field trip to the Greensboro Science Museum. But taking students then to Africa, is that an offshoot of this program?
Yeah, a couple years later, I was lucky enough to work with the Amani Foundation and take a couple of kids. We took about 20 high school students to Nairobi, Kenya. And, oh, what a great experience that was, just to see that whole different part of the world and to have those experiences. It was a really rich, powerful time for myself, for my students, for the Kenyan kids that we got to know and still are friends with to this day.
And then moving fast forward, now, you and your family spent some time in Haiti last year?
In December, my son Owen, who's 9, my wife Carrie and I went to Haiti.
Why did you go? What did you see there? What did you do?
We've been involved with an organization called Partners in Health out of Boston. They've been in Haiti for about 30 years. They are a medical group. And I've just always been really moved by their work that they do there. Haiti's the poorest country in the Western Hemisphere. And I read a book called Mountains Beyond Mountains about 15 years ago by Tracy Kidder about Paul Farmer, who started Partners in Health and works in Haiti. And ever since then, we've been supportive of that group. We followed their work. And we had an opportunity in December to go down to Zanmi Beni, which is an orphanage in Port-au-Prince, and to work with the kids, meet the children of the orphanage, and it was a profound experience.
One of those, you mentioned to me earlier, Jonathan, the experience of seeing a child who up until last year, I believe, was bound to his bed. Could you explain how that can happen?
In Haiti, because as I said, it's the poorest country in the Western Hemisphere. People are terribly poor, and if you're born with a disability, you are often abandoned at the hospital. So the General Hospital of Port-au-Prince had a number of kids who were abandoned there and who basically grew up in the hospital, 3 to a bed at night. Some of them had never been outside ever in their lives. Patrick was one of the children of the hospital, and he became mobile. They shackled him to a bed. I can't imagine a more torturous life than that.
And he was 18? How old was he?
He was 18 when the earthquake hit. And when the earthquake hit, the hospital was destroyed, and the folks from Partners in Health showed up at the hospital that day and asked how the children were. And the director of the hospital said, "They're fine. Take them." Because there was nowhere for them to live, nowhere for them to stay. And that was the day that Zombie Benny was born, the orphanage. And over the next months after that, they started with tents, then they built buildings, and now there's 50 children living there. Half of the kids are disabled. They were formerly of the hospital, and half of the kids were orphaned by the earthquake. And so you've got about 50 kids living at Zombie Benny, and it is an oasis of calm in the middle of the very frenetic city of Port-au-Prince.
Mm. So you'll be interacting with, and your students, interacting with the students of Zombie Benny. What's going to happen when you're there?
Well, what's going to happen is that my students are going to enact arts projects with the kids of Zombie Benny. They'll be dancing with them. They'll be collaborating, making music with them. There'll be a visual arts project. We're taking some cameras down for the kids of Zombie Benny to build a blog and photograph their lives and share that with us. So there'll be a lot of collaboration going on. There'll also be a lot of dancing and music and singing, which is a big part of the culture there. And something that we enjoyed every day that we were in Port-au-Prince in December was the evenings when the heat of the day burns off and it's cool under the mango trees dancing to Haitian music at night. It's a wonderful experience. And so we'll be working on projects, making art, but we'll also be playing Uno and dancing and having fun with the kids.
Jonathan Milner teaches AP U.S. Government, Civics, and Economics to high school students at the University of North Carolina School of the Arts. He was joined in the studio by UNCSA senior viola student Sean Mulligan and rising junior French hornist Meredith Bain. Tonight at 7:30 in Crawford Hall on the UNCSA campus, they'll be joining forces with several of their classmates for a fun, free evening of student music, dance, drama, visual art, and a Bucket Brigade performance. You'll find links to more information about the benefit concert, Global Arts Project, and more at WFDD.org and click on Triad Arts Weekend. Donations at tonight's concert event will be accepted for the Haiti Project, and those funds will help get the students to Port-au-Prince and fund a continuing arts program at Zombie Benny Orphanage. Pretty inspiring stuff. This is Triad Arts Weekend. I'm David Ford, and hold on to your Cuban cigars because we're off to Havana later on in the show with Camerata Romeu conductor Zenaida Romeu. She's taking a break from her all-woman string orchestra in Cuba for a week with the Winston-Salem Symphony's Youth Symphony Orchestras and a free concert you do not want to miss. But first, we'll take a short break and return to the garden. Designer John Newman is here with me next when Triad Arts Weekend continues. Welcome back to Triad Arts Weekend. I'm David Ford. Ah, spring is still in the air, and for acclaimed garden designer John Newman, that means cornus, hamamelis, and thymeliaceae. That is dazzling dogwoods, wonderful witch hazel, and exciting edgeworthia. You can see the fruits of John's labors at the height of their spring season glory at the Central YMCA and Augsburg Lutheran Church in Winston-Salem, and you'll find photos to much more on our website, WFDD.org, and click on Triad Arts Weekend. John and his team of eight co-creators at John Newman Garden Design share a fascination with architecture, Japanese gardens, and design. And for the past 20 years, they've been artfully marrying all of those elements, focusing primarily on residential garden design, including water features, pathways, and beautiful stone mosaics.
The whole idea behind what we do is to change how you feel, and for it to be an experiential thing as well as just a visual thing, but experiential in terms of changing how you feel. And my idea is always to create a sense of calm or a sense of gratitude or a sense of heightened awareness for the beauty of things because of how they are presented so that they're shown to their best advantage. I mean, a pine tree beautifully pruned and juxtaposed with a stone is a stronger message than a pine tree that's just planted in the ground and not juxtaposed with a stone and in which the form has not been developed. So it really is about a psychological impact, just as with any art.
balance is crucial to everything you do, and it seems like music, the balance in classical music, and that's a huge part of who you are as well, and you mentioned that inspires your work.
I think that the same way in which unity is achieved in classical music, you can achieve visually through garden design, through development of a design motif, through repetition of, for example, a color as opposed to a plant that is that color and repeated, but repetition of that color in different forms and different textures. So you might have a golden juniper, you might have a golden chamaecyprus, you might have a golden dawn redwood, you might have a golden ground cover like Creeping Jenny or something like that. But in the style of work, the idea is to distribute these various elements of texture and color and form into an integrated whole that works throughout the piece. And that really comes from nature, because that typically is the way things grow in nature, in a mature forest. Things occur together.
I feel like in every art, there you reach a point where you're at peace with all of your experiences that have kind of filtered through to that moment where you make a decision. If it's an improvisational art, for example, you're a jazz musician, it may sound like, oh, he just made it up on the fly or she just made it up, but it's all based on who you are, all the experiences you've had.
Well, that's true. And you want it to look improvisational. You want it to look inevitable, perhaps is a better word. But you certainly want it to look like it was easy, and that this is just the way it should have been.
Yeah. You know. But to get there takes a lot of experience.
It does. It takes a lot of experience. It takes a lot of thoughtful consideration. But I find myself doing that automatically, which is why I feel like I'm doing what I should be doing. It's where my mind naturally goes. I've often said that if you put all my work together side by side, it would just make one big piece of garden. And I think that's really pretty true.
Yeah. Garden designer John Newman. For 20 years, John and his team of 8 co-creators have taken inspiration from the beautiful natural scenery of Western North Carolina and created contemporary landscapes with plants, stones, and water. You'll find their work in private gardens and public spaces throughout Winston-Salem, including the Central YMCA and Augsburg Lutheran Church. You'll find links to more information at WFDD.org and click on Triad Arts Weekend. While you're there, you can check out several photos from John Newman Garden Design. This is Triad Arts Weekend. I'm David Ford, and on the heels of Daniel Day-Lewis's triumphant night at the Oscars for his role as Abraham Lincoln, our nation's 16th president is still fresh on the minds of many. Well, he's been consuming the mind of my next guest today for many years. Once upon a Blue Ridge actor, Peter Holland, recently brought his original production, Mr. Lincoln's Office, to the Greensboro Historical Museum. The family-friendly tribute to our nation's 16th president is free and open to the public, and Peter's touring company and educational theater events are now in their 8th season.
It's a one-man show, and the whole premise of the show is that you're a visitor to the White House in November of 1863, and Mr. Lincoln, he threw open the doors of the White House for 4 or 5 hours every day, and anybody could come in and meet him and give them their complaints. And he might say, yes, can I help you? What do you want? All right, they'll take care of that. But he was known upon occasion to talk about his boyhood and about things that were important to him. So the idea is that if he felt like speaking and communicating with you, that you would spend an hour with President Lincoln in 1863 and hear about all the events that led to his election and his troubles during the Civil War and how he felt about this country.
And these are not necessarily ambassadors, aristocrats that were meeting with the president. These are
just ordinary people. Now, there were a lot of favor seekers, office seekers, and he didn't have a whole lot of patience with them. But sometimes they would be country bumpkins who would come in and say, well, hey, my friend here, he's as tall as you are. And Mr. Lincoln would, get back to back with whoever it was and say, oh, you're right, or I'm a little taller or a little shorter. And he really enjoyed meeting the common people, I think, much more than the rich people and the pretentious people. And there were also a lot of people who besieged him because they had relatives that were in prison, that had perhaps deserted from the army, were due to face the firing squad. And he signed a lot of pardons and reprieves and saved a lot of lives that way. And his generals would get upset with him for doing that. But he was very kind. And if you saw the movie Lincoln, I think that's one thing Daniel Day-Lewis brought out in his portrayal was Lincoln's compassion and his kindness.
Could we have a sample from Mr. Lincoln's office, Peter? A read, if you will?
Sure. Let's see. Welcome, my friends, to my office. Of course, you know I'm just a temporary occupant of the White House. So my real office I keep here in my hat. You see, as a traveling lawyer for many years, I developed the habit of keeping court documents and other papers in my hat and thinking of my hat as my office. Many of my fellow lawyers had much more peculiar habits, I can tell you that. Everything that's really important to me I keep in here, for example. This little scrap of paper says, common-looking people are the best in the world. That is the reason the Lord made so many of them. It's true, don't you think?
Once upon a Blue Ridge actor, Peter Holland. Peter's also a playwright, and his newest musical is the critically acclaimed Heaven on Wheels, which premiered at the Actors Theater of Charlotte in May of 2010. His traveling theater company will perform two shows of Heaven on Wheels at the Charlotte Motor Speedway the week before the Coca-Cola 600 on May 21st and 22nd. You'll find out more about booking Mr. Lincoln's office and Once Upon a Blue Ridge on our website, wfdd.org, and click on Triad Arts Weekend. I'm David Ford, and we've got Karoff at the keyboard in just a minute. He'll share his take on the musical stylings of the sometimes quirky Frenchman Eric Satie. And then it's time to throw on your cha-cha heels and get set to rumba, and then some. Camarata Romeu conductor Zenaida Romeu is here all the way from Cuba to share her musical magic with the lucky students in the Winston-Salem Symphony's Youth Symphony Orchestras. It'll be a free concert that you do not want to miss next when Triad Arts Weekend continues. Welcome back to Triad Arts Weekend. I'm David Ford, and this is a little old segment we like to call Understanding Classical Music with our good friend, Wake Forest University professor and Steinway artist, Peter Karoff, at the keyboard.
There's a very haunting piece by Eric Satie called Gymnopédie, number 3. It was written in the amazingly early year of 1888. Amazingly early because if you think about the kind of stuff that was going on in 1888, Brahms and Franck and Saint-Saëns, and then there's this music so austere, so haunting, and so non-chromatic, that is to say, so devoid of sharps and flats. Satie based this piece on a poem of a friend of his, a certain poet called Contamine de la Tour, which evokes a world of ancient Greek athletes, like what you might see on an ancient Greek vase, frozen in time. And as he says in the poem, mingling their sarabande with their gymnopaedia. What's that? Well, gymnopaedia, or gymnopédie in French, is just athletic maneuvers as these ancient Greek athletes might have done. A sarabande, as he says, is a slow dance in 3/4 time. And indeed, this piece is in slow 3/4, and it's a kind of sarabande. But what gives it its antique quality and this sort of austere, haunting melody is the fact that the tune doesn't use any black notes at all. It's all on the white notes. In addition, it's all pretty much stepwise. That is to say, you take a note, and then you just take the notes next to it pretty much. In other words, the tune just goes up and down the scale without any big leaps. So you combine this haunting and hypnotic steady 1-2-3 with the very austere melody made nothing of white notes. you get a music that's really quite new and actually quite groundbreaking for its time. Satie was a bit of a provocateur. You know, he was a wit, and he loved hanging out at the cafes in Paris in the 1880s and 1890s. This is the world of Toulouse-Lautrec and so on. And we think of Satie sometimes as a bit more of a provocateur and a wag than a serious composer. For example, some of his pieces have funny titles instead of a piece in the form of a sonata or something. He'll has a piece that's called Piece in the Form of a Pear. So things like that that make us think of Satie as nothing but a someone poking fun at the musical establishment. But some music like this, boy, it's so sincere and so beautiful. It's hard not to take him seriously as a composer. Gymnopédie No. 3 by Erik Satie.
Wake Forest University professor and Steinway artist Peter Karoff at the keyboard. You can check out his many past episodes on our website, wfdd.org, and click on Karoff at the keyboard. I'm David Ford, and this is Triad Arts Weekend. We're off to Havana. The award-winning, internationally acclaimed Cuban string orchestra Camerata Romeu, live in concert, brings an amazing collection of Cuban and Latin American chamber music performed from memory by a group of dynamic women musicians. Their extraordinary music-making, energy, and spontaneous interactions in performance have been bringing audiences young and old to their feet for 20 years under the baton of conductor Zenaida Romeu. The first woman from her country to graduate with a degree in orchestral direction, Zenaida represents the third generation of a family of notable Cuban musicians. This week, she brings her incredible artistic abilities and pedagogic skills to the Winston-Salem Symphony's Youth Symphony Orchestras for a series of rehearsals, concluding in a big concert on Monday night, May 13th at 7:30 in the Stevens Center. What was that like coming up through the ranks as a woman and pursuing conducting in your country?
It's really, I received the courage of my Hungarian teacher, Agnes Kralovsky, to whom I study for 5 years choir conducting. After that, she encouraged me to continue studying orchestra conducting, and I applied to the Superior Institute of Art that was open just at that moment. And I received classes for 5 years of my cousin, Gonzalo Romeu, who has studied at Tchaikovsky Conservatory in Moscow. And at the first time, I was trembling, so I was insecure. But she told me, you must do it. And I trust my teacher, and that's why I apply. When I entered in the Institute of Art, I had a dream to be an orchestra conductor for the first time in Cuba. I have been graduated and prepared to conduct a symphonic orchestra. And the first time I was in front of the orchestra, it was like a prize that I... award that I had. I wanted to show everybody they were professional musicians from the National Symphonic Orchestra. And I remember the first time I was on the stage and conducting Cuban music, that it sounds great. And so it was Amadeo Roldán, Tres Pequeños Poemas. I felt the greatness of the full sound of the orchestra. So I had my first impact to the real sound that I was producing.
There's no other way to duplicate that. Yeah.
Absolutely not. Each person has his own feelings, so no matter how many times you could approximate or hear the music, always is different because the musicians are different, because the space is different, because the moment is different, because your feelings are different, or the moment in your life is different. Perhaps you are in love or you are a little more dry. I don't know. There is a lot of substance that you add in a performance that make one performance unique. That's why we love to go alive to the concerts.
Sure, sure. That moment of spontaneity, that interpretation that's so unique to that moment.
Yeah, because you have on the paper what you need to do, but no how. Mm. It's just a core in this moment.
Yeah. Going through your career, beginning with choral conducting, and then getting into your experience in front of the orchestra, it seems like the next trajectory for most conductors is then you take a bunch of auditions and you eventually wind up with an orchestra of your own. But then to begin your own orchestra, in this case, a string orchestra of only women performers, what caused you to go there, to make that shift and to want to build your own orchestra from the ground up and to have it be an all-woman orchestra?
Because I was given master classes in Spain of choir to a big 100 voices symphonic choir. And I received from that society that the female was not involved with her entire potential in the society. I think it was one or two steps back in my society, being we a third world country.
In Cuba.
In Cuba. And I wanted to show them that we have something that they needed to know about the female in Cuba. That we are also professionals. We have a lot of engineers, doctors, musicians, architects. And it's something that I wanted to show. I wanted also to work every day with an orchestra. If you are orchestra conductor, you have to wait for an invitation that perhaps for one orchestra, the other. And I wanted to work every day. So I said, perhaps I can have a symphonic orchestra, a large symphonic orchestra by my own. But let's start with the orchestra, the string orchestra, that is the bay of any ensemble, bigger ensemble. That's why I began with the string orchestra.
And the Camerata Romeu, the sound of the group, the what are some distinguishing characteristics of your group? When people hear this Camerata, what sorts of sounds or colors do you hope that they perceive?
I'll use an ensemble that comes from the center of Europe, around 17th century. And I wanted to use this ensemble, string orchestra, and give Europe back with the sound of our countries.
Mm.
I start with Cuban music. I wanted to use this ensemble to express our ideas, our sounds, our rhythm, our forms, our genre. And that's why I have done. First with Cuban music, second with Latin American, and even with North American music. So Cuban music and Latin American music is not just charango, it's not guitar, it's not maraca, it's not clave, but it's much more because our composer had been knowing the high way of thinking that the academy had brought to them or they assimilate through the studies that, of course, the great academy comes from Europe. But after that, there is an internal process that had been growing during those decades or centuries that express our own nationality. Mm-hmm. And so the product of those composers are different than what produced European composers. Ah. And that is the point. So we have in America another music, even it was thought for string orchestra. Hmm. Or for piano, or for any ensemble, because our composer has the technique. They have all knowledge, but they are producing new music for the Europeans to share with them at the same level the values of our own music.
Watching a recent Camerata Romeu performance on YouTube, I'm immediately struck by their expressive string playing, but I'm also drawn to the musicians, their energy and spontaneous interactions up on stage as they move to the music, smile and laugh while performing. And the entire string orchestra often plays by memory, with no music and no music stands in front of them.
In Cuba, when the revolution triumphed, most of the person that used to go to the concert were high class, and most of them were outside of Cuba. So just a few persons stay And each year they were older and older, and you see at the concert a few persons with gray hair. They say, I have something very good that I want to share with all the person that wanted to feel the music. So I said, I will have an orchestra with young ladies, and all I want to attract the attention of young persons that could think, oh, that girl could be my cousin, my sister, my brother, or my love. So I took off all things that I thought would be a distance in between the producer and the consumer of the music. So I took off the stands. I put the skirts shorter, not long, because we used to play in black, very very close, with a long dress, and was the only accepted for the classical music. I think we are a tropical climb. We have a tropical climb. It's uncommon to be like this, and sometimes a person said that is death music. And I said, no, we are very alive. We are a live person. And we make some changes to attract the persons. Like, because I believe that half of the audience, when they go to the concert, they want to see. They are seeing the, like, it's like a theater. It's they want to performance. They want to see what is performing on the stage, not only hearing. The musician, perhaps they are closing their eyes, they are enjoying the music, but another person of the audience, they want to see. And that's why I said, let's do like a little performance. And it's like a theater. When you are playing a playwright, something happened into the actors and the actress. And the same happened with the musicians. So if someone makes some mistake, there is a smile and a sight that from another on the over. If they are enjoying the music, they express with the face. And it's like a complicity that we have on stage that all the audience love very much.
You're going to be working with the Winston-Salem Youth Symphony Orchestra at the Stevens Center. The music on the program, not easy. This is some complex work. I was trying to follow the guaguancó.
Uh-huh.
Could you explain what's going on there rhythmically? I was looking at it on YouTube, and it just seems so rhythmically lush, just full
it's
of life.
It's rumba.
A rumba.
Rumba is a complex, and guaguancó is part of the rumba.
Okay.
And it's really folk music.
Folk music, huh?
Folk music. Originally, the music is played by, it's a rhythm. It has no harmony, no guitar, no piano, no nothing. Just a song that is sung by a folk singer. And it's a song, rhythm, and a dance. Nothing else.
Thank you.
The rhythm could be produced with a teaspoon against a glass or with a knock in a stool or a table or a box. And different polyrhythm that is produced with a special clave rhythm. Mm-hmm. And it's very difficult for everybody, even for musicians, because it's what the rumberos do is like a language that they know very deep. And the academic had to learn about them and write the music that they produce because they are not musicians. But they know how to do that music. Mm. And the musicians, the musicologists had to write, transcribe all those rhythms to understand, to make the research about that music. And Guido López Gavilán, who was a composer and arranger and orchestra conductor, he studied at Tchaikovsky Conservatory also. Mm-hmm. He make like an alchemist.
An alchemist.
Alchemist in between folk and chamber music. And he took that tune that is folk, nobody knew who did it, and he make a piece 7 minutes long. And it's very interesting because it's like a confluence of different culture, European culture, and the tradition of rhythm music for string orchestra and the rumba. Tradition.
I love YouTube for this very reason, because I could see you interacting with the orchestra musicians in La Camerata, and particularly the cello was smiling and kind of laughing the back and forth between you two, because there was a lot going on there. But forgiving the beat, you've got your shoulders in there. You're doing some things that I don't recall from the podium, but you set the tempo right on. It looks like fun, but I know it must be tough. And will this be your performance and students will watch, or will you be incorporating some musicians from the Winston-Salem Youth?
Now, I will have my first meeting today.
Okay. So the youth orchestra is going to do this piece. Wow. Yeah.
It's a hard piece to play.
Yeah. It sounded...
It's very difficult, even for our musician. Yeah. I remember the first time when I studied this original version is for string orchestra. Mm-hmm. And later, he wrote for large orchestra. And I remember the first time I had to show my musician how to play the clave. Pa, 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 pa. This is for rumba.
For rumba only, yes.
Yeah. We say, pa, pa, pau, pa, pa. Pa, pa, pau, pa, pa. Pa, pa, pau, pa, pa. And you as it beat. Pa, pa, pau, pa, pa. Pa, pa, pau, pa, pa. Pa, 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 pa. This is rumba, because the song is pa, 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 pa.
Completely unique, and that's it's wonderful to hear. I'm looking forward to hearing the students tackle this. Zenaida Romeu. She conducts the internationally acclaimed all-woman string orchestra, Camerata Romeu. Last month, Zenaida was on the campus of Wake Forest University, where she gave a talk, My Life in Cuba, the Camerata Romeu and Latin American Music. And she also led the Wake Forest University Choir in a concert at Brendel Recital Hall. This week, she's back in Winston-Salem, where she'll conduct the Winston-Salem Youth Symphony Orchestra for a series of rehearsals and a concluding concert on Monday night, May 13th at 7:30 in the Stevens Center. You'll find links to the Camerata Romeu, their Latin Grammy-nominated CDs, and more at WFDD.org, and click on Triad Arts Weekend.
Well, that's all for today's program. Our technical producer is Eddie Garcia, and our associate producer is Bethany Chafin. You'll find podcasts of Triad Arts Weekend, along with pictures and lots of helpful links, on our website, wfdd.org, and click on Triad Arts Weekend. Please send your questions, comments, and suggestions to triadarts@wfu.edu. I'm David Ford. Thanks for listening to Triad Arts Weekend.